Chapter 30. Chateau d'If. A drizzle had begun to fall shortly before they left the hotel, and now, as midnight approached, it had given way to a steady rain that pattered through the trees and gurgled down the rain gutters. The streets glistened under the hazy yellow glow of the streetlights. Here and there, late-night pedestrians hurried down the sidewalks under umbrellas or folded newspapers, or waited in clusters beneath bus shelters. In the alley across from their hotel, Sam and Remy stood in the shadows and watched the lobby doors. Down the block, a gray Citroen Sara sat at the curb, a pair of figures just visible in the dimmed interior. Earlier, from the window of their hotel room, Remy had gotten a look at the driver's face. He'd been with Kolkoff at the Malmousse Café. Whether there were more watchers around, they couldn't tell, but they knew it was best to assume so. After parting company with Kolkov at the café earlier that afternoon, they'd roamed the Malmousse, shopping and taking in the sights for a few hours. They saw neither Kolkov nor his men until they started back to the hotel, when two men on motorcycles fell in behind their taxi. Despite their nonplussed reaction to Kolkov's threats, Sam and Remy had taken them seriously. Fearing their room was bugged, they found a quiet corner in the mostly deserted hotel bar and called Rube Haywood on the Iridium. He wasn't at CIA headquarters in Langley, but they reached him at home. Sam put him on speakerphone and quickly explained the situation and their worries. Rube said, "I know a guy in Long Beach. Used to work for the Diplomatic Security Service. He runs his own shop now. Want me to have him send a couple guys to the house?" "We'd be grateful." "Give me 10 minutes. He called back in 5. "Done. They'll be there in 2 hours. Tell Summer they'll have IDs. Kozel Security Group. They'll ask for Mrs. French."
"Got it."
"Don't you think it's time to call it a day?" Rube asked. "You've seen how far these guys will go. Nothing's worth this."
"We don't even know what it is," Remy said.
"You get my point. I'm worried about you, too."
"We appreciate that, Rube, but we're going to see this through."
Haywood sighed. "At least let me help you."
"What did you have in mind?" asked Sam.
"I've taken a second look at Kolkov. A few years ago, he was in Chechnya. We think he was playing middleman for a black market AK-47 dealer. Wouldn't take much to get his name slipped onto the terrorist watch list. A couple calls and I could put him on the radar of the DCPJ, he said, referring to the Direction Centrale Police Judiciaire, or Central Directorate Judicial Police, France's version of the FBI. There's nothing they could arrest him on, but they might be able to detain him and his buddies for a while."
"Do it. Any breathing room you can buy us will help.
The question is whether they'll be able to find him. Given his background, he's not going to make it easy for them."
3 hours later, Rube had called back. The DCPJ had put out a bulletin for Kolkov, but he wouldn't know anything more for a few hours, if then. The French, Rube told them, were cagey about sharing information.
"I don't suppose you know a French version of Guido the Shoemaker slash arms dealer."
"Sam, the French are rabid about their gun laws. You don't want to get caught with an unregistered one."
"But I do know a guy named Maurice."
He gave Sam the phone number, and they hung up. Now Remy pulled up her jacket collar against the chill and huddled closer to Sam beneath the umbrella.
"I don't see anyone else."
"Me neither.
Shall we?" With one last look around, they stepped from the alley and started down the sidewalk. Using the rudimentary tradecraft skills Sam had picked up at Camp Perry, they strolled the streets north of the harbor for an hour, doubling back on their path, stepping abruptly into cafes and then out the back door, and generally watching for any signs of pursuit. Satisfied they were alone, they hailed a cab and directed the driver to take them to Rue Loge on the Vieux-Port. As promised by the rental company's manager, at a slip in the northwest corner of the harbor, they found waiting for them a gray 18-foot Mistral. Though essentially a motor whaleboat with a glassed-in pilot house barely bigger than a phone booth,
It was wide-beamed and sported a reliable and quiet Lombardi engine. It would, they hoped, serve their purposes. Using the key the manager had messengered over, Sam undid the padlocked hawser and the lines while Remy started the engine. He jumped aboard and she throttled up, pointing the bow toward the mouth of the harbor. 10 minutes later, the breakwater appeared off the bow. Astern, the lights of Marseille, hazy in the rain, reflected off the rippled surface of the water. Working to keep up with the droplets streaming down the pilot house windscreen, the single windshield wiper thumped softly. Beside Remy at the wheel, Sam said, "I've been thinking about what Kolkoff said." He saw her expression and quickly said, "Not about his offer. About what Bondarek's interest is in whatever it is. He said it was a legacy. We know he's deadly serious about it, so maybe the answer's in his family history." "Good point," Remy said, taking a buoy down the Mistral's port side. "We'll turn Soma loose on it." "You're not, are you? Having second thoughts, I mean?" "Only as far as you're concerned." Remy smiled in the darkness, her face dimly lit by the helm console's green lighting. "We've been through worse."
"Such as?"
"Well, for starters, there was that time in Senegal when you insulted that shaman."
"Forget I asked."
30 minutes later, Ile Dief appeared, a white lump rising from the dark ocean a half mile off the bow. The chateau had closed at 5:30, and aside from a lone navigation beacon pulsing red against the night sky, the island was completely dark.
"Doesn't look as welcoming at night, does it?" Remy asked.
"Not even close." In preparation for their after-hours tour, they'd used Google Earth to scrutinize the island for hidden mooring spots that would shield them from not only Kolkoff, should he and his men happen to follow, but also the Marseille Harbor Patrol. They'd found a promising spot on the island's seaward side. Now Remy eased the Mistral to port. They spent a half hour circumnavigating the island, looking for other boats or signs of life. Seeing nothing, they came about and proceeded along the northern shoreline. Ahead, the chateau's westernmost turret, the largest of the three, came into view above the battlement. Remy steered into the cove below it, throttled down, and let the Mistral glide to a stop at the base of the wall. Aside from a rain-churned surface, the water was flat calm here. Sam dropped anchor and used the boat hook to pull the Mistral closer to the rocks. Remy jumped over and followed, stern line in hand. He jammed the line beneath a basketball-sized rock. Hand in hand, they picked their way along the wall, hopping from rain-slick boulder to rain-slick boulder until they reached a particularly tall one they'd spotted on the satellite shots. Sam climbed atop it, positioned himself below a notch in the battlements used by archers, then leaped up and grabbed the wall's inner ledge. He chinned himself up and crawled atop the wall, then he helped Remy up and down the other side. He hopped down beside her.
"Thank God for bad architecture," he said.
If not for the fort's backward-facing fortifications, they would have needed an extension ladder to accomplish what they'd just done.
"Don't see anyone," Remy said. "You?"
Sam shook his head. In their research, they'd found no mention of the island employing after-hours guards, but to be safe, they would proceed as if there were. With Remy in the lead, they crept forward along the curved wall of the turret to where it met the straight western wall and followed this to the end. Beside them, the stone, having been warmed by the sun all day, then soaked by the rain, smelled like chalk. Remy peeked around the corner.
"Clear," she whispered.
In Sam's pocket, the iridium vibrated. He pulled it out and answered, keeping his voice a whisper. It was Rube.
"Bad news, Sam. The DCPJ can't find Kolkoff or his buddies. They know he entered the country on his own passport, but none of the hotels or rental car agencies have any record of him."
"Switched to a false passport," Sam guessed.
"Probably so. Bottom line, he's still out there. Be careful."
"Thanks, Rube. We'll be in touch." Sam hung up and gave Remy the news. "We're not any worse off than we were before. Shall we?"
"Absolutely."
They continued along the southern wall and around the next turret to the chateau's side entrance, an arched breezeway that led into the courtyard.
"Freeze," Sam whispered. Very slowly, crouch down.
Together they dropped to their knees.
"What?"
Remy whispered.
"Directly ahead of us."
100 yards away across the plaza stood 2 red-roofed outbuildings. The left-hand one, shaped like a truncated J, abutted the wall along the island's northern shoreline. Under the eaves they could see 4 windows, black rectangles in the gloom. They waited, staying perfectly still for a minute, and then 2. After 3 minutes, Remy whispered,
"You saw something?"
"I thought so. Guess I was wrong. Come on."
"Stop," she rasped. "You weren't wrong. There, at the far corner."
Sam looked where Remy had indicated. It took a moment for his eyes to pick it out, but there was no mistake. Barely visible in the darkness was the white oval of a man's face.